I'm Daniel Print, and I'm a staff writer here with The Movie Buff, and you're watching The Movie Buff Show. In this conversation, I spoke with the team behind the four-minute musical short film Thirsty, which had its premiere at Tribeca Film Festival this past Monday. I spoke with the film's director and writer Josh Peterson, its composer and executive producer Alexis Hart, who wrote the song Thirsty, as well as the star of the film, Rob Nilsson. The film is about a dried-up old seafarer, played by Nilsson, who chases this figure across an apocalyptic desert in a modern parable set to Alexis Hart's song. The film is available on Tribeca at Home as part of the Shorts Pass, and you can watch it through June 23rd. More info is below, and let's get right into the conversation for Thirsty.
Okay, so whoever wants to start, just introduce yourself, just your role on the film, and yeah.
And your name. Yeah, I'm Josh Peterson, and I wrote and directed and edited and co-produced the film Thirsty.
Cool. And Rob, did you want to go next, or Alexis?
Yeah, well, I was the old coot that Josh persuaded to walk through the desert with him, only because we've been working together for about 100 years. He's edited my films, he's acted in them, it's been a... So whatever he tells me to do, in other words, I'll do it. Rob Nilsson is the name.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Alexis Hart, and I am the songwriter / composer and executive producer of Thirsty.
Cool. It's great to have you guys all here. I'm Daniel, and this is The Movie Buff. So my first question is, do you guys consider this a short film or is it a music video?
Ha ha ha, good question. Depends who we're talking to, really. No, I would just say that it's a short film. I think people tend to take things more seriously when you say it's not a music video, but you call it a film. So that's why I say depends who we're talking to, but it's really both. I mean, it's the length of the song, and it is anchored in the song, but it's its own piece of work. And I certainly did not want something where I was, you know, lip syncing to my own song. So I never liked doing that. So not a music video in the traditional sense, but it's a short film and a music video is what I would say.
Yeah, I'd say it's both, but I really always thought of it as a short film. And it has a little, we do expand around the edges of it. There's a little bit of a prologue before the song begins and a little bit of stuff happens after the song ends. So in my mind, it's always been a 4-minute short.
Okay, you have any thoughts on that, Rob?
these guys, they tell me where to go and what to say. No, I think Josh is right. I think the beauty of what he accomplished and the beauty of the song, the other reason I wanted to do it is I really believe in the feeling and the gentle vision of this song. And so, yeah, it can be anything that you want it to be. And to me, it was an experience of, there were so many coincidences with my own relationship to that desert and other things that I really have a hard time telling you what it is, except that I love it.
Okay, what desert did you guys film in?
We filmed in Western Nevada. I had gone out a month prior to the shoot and kind of scouted out a bunch of old ghost towns and, you know, playas, and found a few that worked. And, you know, we then drove out in a single vehicle. This was a very, very bare bones, skin of your teeth production. And it being COVID times, we were all multiply tested, wearing our masks all the time in the car and barreling down the freeway at 65 miles per hour with all of the windows wide open. So it was a little hard to have conversation as we went, but we had a blast. It was a really, really great adventure. And, you know, I had always wanted to, not just because our budget was small, I had always wanted to make this a really lean and mean and agile production. So the crew was me, and Alexis was our producer and driver, and Rob was our cast. So it was a 3-man production. And that meant that although the thing was scripted and I had a plan for everything, we could react in real time and be inspired by the locations as we discovered them and come up with inspirations in the field in the moment. And that's the way I like to work in general. And Rob and I go way back, Alexis and I go way back. There's a level of trust. We can all kind of hold hands and jump off the cliff together and feel like we'll land safely somehow.
Josh had all his equipment, including tripod and reflectors and cameras and everything in a small backpack. And that's how we went. That was which to me is the way films will increasingly go, because it becomes so possible to do work like this in a small and intense situation.
Okay. And it really, it enables and encourages experimentation and risk taking and, all of this stuff and discovery, right? You know, it's like, I always believe it's great to have a plan. It's great to go in knowing what you want to do and have, you know, the baseline stuff laid out there, but also be open to chance and surprise.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of surprises, did you guys know about that boat before filming?
I didn't. That was something I had researched. I had driven past it many times without knowing it. And it is something that a lot of people have seen. It's in Inverness in Northern California. And it's in a very different setting than you might think looking at the film itself. So we've kind of disguised, you know, where it is. And I did a little digital trickery to kind of dress it up a little bit beyond that. But it was, I mean, one of the fun things on this was, you know, looking for old wrecks, looking for old ghost towns. And there is this wealth of incredible locations out west where you can, and a lot of those things are easily accessible. That was one of them. So, I feel like I have a compendium now, a great list of locations that we didn't even get to use. So, Rob, hit me up next time you're looking for a ghost town location for your films.
Yeah, well, I got a bunch up in Modoc County too.
That's right.
Northeastern Nevada, I can tell you about. Next time you do something as silly as this.
Perfect. Now, how hot was it filming? Oh, sorry, Rob.
Well, go ahead.
It was not that hot, I would say. It's interesting because, you know, my first location scout, I had actually gone down in July down to near the Mojave Desert and Death Valley area. My wife mm-hmm. and I took a little trip and discovered very quickly that it was probably not a good idea to try to shoot in the summertime down there. I remember one evening, it was at about 6 p.m. It was 115 degrees Fahrenheit. And we thought we'd spare ourselves that. So looking in Western Nevada and shooting in the fall, because we shot mainly in September, October of last year, meant that it was fairly moderate. It was sun blasted, but we weren't risking our lead actors' health or our own in the process.
Okay. And Rob, what's it like wearing a suit in the desert?
Well, you know, I don't know. Once I understood or tried to understand what Josh wanted to do, I tried to just throw it all away, any thought of anything I'm wearing or anything I'm, all I'm trying to do is feel how it would feel to try to get as far into it as I could. So, but it wasn't that hot. I mean, my legs are not everything they were once. I remember one time we were walking along this narrow ledge over a pit, I don't know, 100 feet, 20 feet deep down, which is an old lead mine or an old silver mine. And outside the camera, I was actually holding Alexa's hand so I wouldn't fall into the pit. It was more things like that were more taxing, but no, yeah, clothing, whatever. So I tried to be there as much as I could.
I mean, it's a very primal character, you know, as written, it's very mysterious, you know, it's a very open-ended thing, right? In such a short thing, we're not kind of developing a backstory or, specifics of character so much as just this kind of raw human experience of being out in this extreme environment. And then maybe a general sense of, you know, the themes of the film, which are about, you know, environmental disaster and intergenerational questions of responsibility or guilt or forgiveness. And so what I wrote and how I directed Rob was really kind of elemental and kind of moment to moment. And one of the great things about working with Rob is, like I said before, there's that trust. And he's an amazing actor and stuntman. I even had been doing stunts at one point. And he was there 100%. I was really pushing him to the extremes emotionally and physically. And Alexis and I both, you know, he was all in and we just had to keep up with him, so.
Okay, gotta ask about the stunts then.
Oh yeah.
Was that the falling into the,
yeah, I don't know so if you wanna falling, spoil. Yeah, so there's a scene, yeah, I'll try not to spoil it, but Rob had to do a backward fall that, you know, would be challenging for anyone, but he did it beautifully. And he did one test before the camera rolled and one keeper, and that's what we had. And it worked great. He was fearless.
And that, okay. I just didn't show it.
See, I feel like I would have been more scared going across that ledge you were talking about than doing the fall.
Yeah, that was, you know, the guy's holding my hand, he's gonna yank me back, right? He won't let me die because then he wouldn't have a video.
That's right.
There's trust in them.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, what was it like I don't know if you want to spoil, but what was it like creating that visually with that fall and that transition?
That effect? Yeah, I'd rather not spoil it too much, okay. But I will say that it was done very simply. You know, it was actually, that was one shot that was shot on an iPhone because I could get a really high 4K frame rate on it. And it was, the compositing was done in After Effects. And this is really, you know, these are tools that are available to anybody. And, you know, I basically did the effect myself. And then this really good effects artist named Chris Green stepped in to polish it for me. And to me, it was really just, you know, I wasn't interested in doing a very effects heavy thing, but I wanted there to be some moments of kind of surprise and wonder. And so for me, it's about just conceiving and designing something that really carefully in terms of how it fits in narratively and what the sort of emotional context around it is. And then just executing it technically as well as could be. But it's a very simple moment. And I think if it works, it really has to do more with how it's, you know, how it fits in the structure of the piece. And obviously, like I said, you know, Rob's performance really sells it.
Now, visually as well, like what was it like getting that red hue? Because those scenes look pretty cool.
Well, that red hue is, in a weird way, it's not real, but it is real. Because back in September in the Bay Area, we had this really crazy apocalyptic day during the fire season, which informs so much of the song and the film in every way. But we had this really, really bizarre day. I'd never lived anything like this, where we woke up and the sky was a dark, reddish, angry orange. And it turned out it was actually fires from Oregon that had sent a very high level layer of cloud smoke above us. And it was a very, very disturbing sight. The street lights were on all day long. They never went off. It finally cleared later that evening. When it happened, I was up in the morning, like 9 or 10 in the morning, outside shooting pictures of it because I just couldn't believe it. And it suddenly occurred to me, well, this would be a really interesting look for the final scene of this film, which had already been conceived and written, but this idea of this kind of crazy reddish sky and this really disturbing reddish light suffusing everything was really, really compelling. We couldn't get it together to go actually shoot our scene, our coastal scene that day, but I did go online to look and see what it looked like up in that area, which is up in Marin County. There is actually a weather camera on Stinson Beach, right near where that boat location is. And I clicked onto it online and I saw this solid, slightly graded, you know, there's some variations and it wasn't like a just a blank, but it was this deep orange red. And I did a screen capture of that and I overlaid that. Actually, that is the real color that's overlaid on that entire scene. So even though we didn't shoot that day, that's what it would have looked like. So there's a weird way in which that is surreal, but it is reality. We actually had a day like that here.
Okay. That's so cool. I was definitely going to ask if you like kind of got everyone together and was like, we got to go shoot this right now. But that's interesting.
I did try, but it was impossible at that such late notice.
Okay. Now I'd love to ask like a chicken and the egg situation. Did the song come first or did some of the visuals come first?
The song came first.
Okay. Okay. What was it like writing at Alexis?
It was like a lot of songs. It's kind of like a little inhabitation, you know, like I get taken over by an idea and it kind of gets lodged in my head and kind of builds itself from there. The song actually, I wrote it fairly quickly, but it took me a while to figure out how I wanted it arranged. And especially during COVID, like how to record something like that with a real rhythm section, which I always like to do. So I have a producer that I work with out in Cape Cod, used to be in Berkeley, but he's since moved east, named John Evans. He's an amazing bass player. And luckily he's got he had a COVID bubbled session drummer that we've worked together a bunch in person, but this time we had to do it remotely. So I sent a bare bones version of the song, and he got together with his drummer and recorded the upright bass and drums, sent it back to me. And then I kind of built it out from there, added all the things that you hear in the song, like organ and guitar and lots of vocals. But yeah, and then it was just this wonderful handoff. I think Josh immediately kind of got what I was trying to do with the lyrics. And it's just a way we've worked in the past. There's a wonderful kid having a great time behind me. I love it. New York is back. It's great. Anyway, I give Josh sort of carte blanche to do what he will with the song once it's done. I don't try and influence what he does. I like what he does so much. The song was written first and then it was a handoff.
And I should say too that, you know, one of the great Alexis's lyrics are always so amazing and they're so multi-layered. And you actually could take this song in a lot of different directions. I kind of zeroed in on one of the themes that's there, which is this kind of environmental reckoning kind of theme. But there's all kinds of really interesting things there. There's stuff about, you know, sort of deeper personal, individual kind of thirsts and needs. Obviously when you do something like this, you just sort of, you jump in and pursue the thing that hooks you personally. Yeah. But you know, someone else could have done something very, very different with this. And that's part of the richness, I think, of the song in the first place, is that it really, it rewards multiple listens and multiple interpretations.
To add to that, the part that I took was the human thirst to know, to feel, and in my case, to find myself, and at the end, to find myself rejecting myself. Wow, that was an awful, awful feeling. And yet, in a tragic way, I didn't think I deserved it necessarily to be accepted by my younger self. I didn't see that, but I did feel that thirst would always be there. So that was how I did.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's the beautiful thing about music is that with a different director, it's a completely different short and there's so many different interpretations to it.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, visually, did you have like, so Alexis, did like, was it like, okay, handing the baton off and then you were just like, you could do whatever you wanted?
Yeah.
Like, what was the collaboration like?
That's basically
as long as
we've always worked. I mean, this is the second, we've worked in different capacities over the years. We're close friends and we've known each other for a long time, but you know, he's composed music for other films of mine. I've used songs of his as background music in other films. And then this is the second time that he's asked me to make a short film out of one of his songs. The first one was The Night of My Death, which we did a few years ago and which won awards at Cinequest and Oxford Film Festival and places like that. And both times it's been really wonderful because there's a level of trust there. Alexis just sort of says, gives me free rein, says, what would you do with this? And I kind of run with it. And he's always been incredibly supportive. And it's, you know, it's a great partnership that I really cherish because I'm always delighted to hear what he's working on next. He's got some really neat songs going on right now and other spoken word kind of almost sort of beyond music, sort of narrative soundscape kind of things. And it's really cool to have him kind of be presented with something like this that is a fully formed work of art on its own, and to be told, okay, now what would you do with this as in cinematically, and then to just be free to kind of fly off with that, and always know, I always feel like Alexis has my back and he'll support me, and you know, together we'll have a result that'll be something fresh and new.
When you guys are filming this, are you playing the song Thirsty over it?
We did listen to it on the drive out there, but no. I had really scripted it out kind of beat by, you know, line by line, and kind of I knew, you know, how it would all be structured. I would sort of listen to it a little now and then on my own just to kind of, you know, feel the mood. You know, part of this whole design and the kind of the decrepit saloon at the beginning and the sort of ghost towns and Rob's, you know, beat up, dusty old, you know, sea captain's uniform, all of those things were partly inspired by the way by the song and the way it's produced, particularly, which has this kind of rickety, sort of Tom Waitsian kind of old, you know, old timey kind of feel to it. So that was one of the things that became, it was a sort of a sonic thing that theme that became a visual theme and a design theme. I don't know, I should ask, you know, I know Rob listened to the song several times and really appreciated it. And obviously it's in Alexis's, you know, bone marrow and blood and sweat. So he probably didn't need to refresh that much. But Rob, did you listen to it while we were out there?
I can't remember if I did or not, but I do like that song a lot. There's just something, and you're right about the levels. It doesn't reveal itself in a first kind of listening. It takes you somewhere, and that somewhere is someplace worth examining. So I'm a big fan of it.
Visually, I think this is like a short that how I would imagine how someone would do, like the Highwaymen with like Willie Nelson and all them.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. Now
we're available for hire.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
Okay, great. Now I gotta ask, who got to keep the suit?
I still have the suit in a bag in my closet with all of my production gear and a few other mementos, the hat, which appears very briefly, but which I put a lot of work into distressing.
We're waiting for the advent of Thirstier.
I mean, part of it for me as a filmmaker is always, I have a tendency to hold on to things like just in case, you know, what if we needed another pickup shot? And then it ends up in a storage area somewhere and I eventually forget that I still have it, but It's still
actually
there.
Starting a fashion line while I'm in New York, and it's going to be based on that look. So you'll see it. You should see it on Madison Avenue soon.
Like, and we should actually give a shout out to Emma Grace Eisenman, who did the costume design and did the whole thing. She designed it. She put the costume together. She did an amazing job. She's a student of costume and production design at
CalArts.
CalArts.
Yeah.
And just a really, really talented young woman, and who just did a knockout job on that.
And yet it sounds like you're exiling her work to the storage unit.
That's true. Well, it's there for, you know, when there's a museum piece or tour or whatever, I can always pull it up.
I've actually got the mirror that we used in the creating the saloon is in my basement. I put it up, and sometime I'll go down there and have a drink and sit in front of it and pretend I'm Rob.
Hey, but Josh, you promised that I could be buried in it.
That's right. You're going to be buried? I thought we were going to put you in a ship and set it on fire.
Okay. That's
put you on a longboat and make it a Viking funeral pyre.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's get a little aquavit in there.
That's right.
It's a celebration.
Perfect. Now, I'm going to look at my question. I'll start wrapping up, but I'm just going to see if I have any more questions I really wanted to ask here. Sorry, what did you say, Rob?
I just realized what your picture is behind there. You didn't put that up for our purpose, did you?
No, it's always up there. That would have been fitting, though.
That would have been fitting, that's right.
It would have been fitting, but we're not saying.
Yeah.
I see. People
have to watch the film to understand the reference, I think.
That's right.
I don't know if it's so desolate enough for the style of the film, though, you know?
It's related.
I also noticed in the...
It's the pre-apocalyptic vision there. Yeah. So you have to watch the film to see the post-apocalyptic one.
Exactly. See, this is the prequel right behind me. Now, I noticed in the credits that the child is played by Leo Hart. So, relation to you, Alexis?
That young man is my son, and he works for free for donuts. So, and he's going to be at the screening tomorrow. He's really, really excited to see himself up on a big screen.
Is he big? The whole family with you?
Yeah, everyone's going to be there.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, is he picky about what kind of donuts he works for?
He's kind of a simpleton. He likes the plain ones. Chocolate always works.
Okay. Now, are you guys excited for the premiere?
Very.
Beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really exciting. It's we're out on this incredible outdoor screen on Pier 76, and it sold out within a couple of hours when they put the tickets online, but it will be also available to stream for a limited time on the Tribeca platform if people want to see it. And that's easy to do. You can go on there and get a shorts pass to watch it. But I've seen the opening night film screening was at that same location, and I was there, and I was really impressed with. And New York really knows how to do this. They've really made an art out of it. I think in the last year, 2020, with the pandemic rooftop screenings, they've got it nailed down technically. It looks and sounds amazing. So I'm really excited to see it on the big screen there with the Manhattan skyline as a backdrop. It's pretty spectacular.
Okay. That's perfect. What day does it premiere?
Premieres tomorrow, June 14th at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And then it'll be available online Tuesday, I think, starting 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight. But it says if people go on the Tribeca website and search for Thirsty, they can find it.
Okay. Now, does the screen, is it a problem that it's playing during the day, or is there like LEDs?
That was my fear, but it's actually not projected. It's actually a gigantic LCD screen, really, really state of the art. And I saw a screening that started in the evening while it was still light, and it looked spectacular. I was really, really impressed.
Okay, awesome, cool. So it's 1:32, so I will start wrapping up. So Josh Peterson, who you do like everything on the film, almost. You shoot it, you direct it, you produce it, write it, and to Alexis's music. Alexis Hart, who does the music, and composer, executive producer, and then Rob Nielsen, who is the actor in the film. It's been great chatting with you all about Thirsty for the Movie Buff.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Daniel. Likewise.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to stop the recording. See you all.